Long ago, far away, life was clear. Close your eyes. Harry Nilsson. JR says this isn't a Christmas song because it doesn't say anything about Christmas, but it's subtitled Christmas 1954. And it's all about looking back at being a kid, and innocence, and nostalgia. So here we go. Abby has the picture up on our website already, WGOW.com. And it is a picture of, yes, a black velvet painting of the Nazarene.
Oh, this is the official explanation. This is the official story.
This is the story. And it goes something like this. 1980, me and three of my buddies take a trip across the country, actually the continent. We stayed going all summer, never slept in a bed, just camped our way across. I've mentioned the fact that it was rather hot in 1980 in the summer, and we spent the 4th of July actually in Mexico across the border. We were kind of thinking we were going to try to make the Willie Nelson big picnic he used to have. And just for those who thought I might be exaggerating, I just looked it up. Wikipedia actually has an entry, 1980 United States heat wave. And said it actually was counted, it was a $58 billion disaster in this country alone. And I think there's another year that sort of battled back and forth. Midwestern cities were having troubles too. So Dallas-Fort Worth had 69 days of over 100 degrees, 42 consecutive, and Hurricane Allen had somehow or another made it even worse, but made the heat wave extend. So we're down on the Mexican border, and that was back before borders were as tight as they are now, and I'm down there with my three best friends, but we're at probably three-quarters of the way through the trip. Our plan was still to go down into the Keys. We'd gone way up into British Columbia, all the way down the West Coast. We'd head everywhere. And we go into Mexico, and my friend Steve Harper, who I refer to usually as Tarzan, and Kevin's met him, and these are very intriguing, unusual, and beautiful people. I mean, just unique human beings. And they were all a year older than me. We're in Mexico, and Steve buys a big, oversized black velvet Jesus painting. And this was not a joke or anything. His mother actually liked the black velvet thing. I mean, I don't know what all she had, dolls playing poker. And I still to this day kick myself for not getting the one that had Elvis with his guitar slung over his back, shaking hands with St. Peter at the gate.
I was in Mexico about the same time, and black velvet was huge.
Oh, it was massive.
I mean, everywhere.
I mean, think about the song, Black Velvet, about Elvis. And I should have bought that painting. And so we have our adventure in Mexico, and we're on our way back, and it was so hot during the day that we just didn't travel. We slept during the day in the shade and traveled at night because we're in this big Olds 88, big Delta 88, and we were hauling an Apache camper that we had pulled all the canvas out of and just turned it into a pop-up trailer just to haul our stuff.
Yeah, you didn't look like a caricature in any way, did you?
No. And I've got a massive, elk horn that I found somewhere like around Jackson Hole, and our little Apache is getting pretty crowded back there. And I just kind of lost it. I went nuts that night, and I couldn't stand it anymore. They stunk. The weather, I mean, the windows were down. We had no AC. It was just like a blast furnace coming in, and I had to stretch out. And I was cramping. I said, stop the car, stop the car. I've got to get out. And we pulled over, and I went back and made a little bedding area for me in the trailer. And I laid down everybody's sleeping bag, and I moved stuff out of the way, and I had it all set up. Oh, man, I was going to wield it. I was going to stretch out and sleep. And they were watching me with great interest, and they were thinking, well, that was a good idea. I wish I thought of that. And so then we get in. They shut the lid. I hear the car start up.
Uh-oh.
And I immediately smell carbon monoxide.
Uh-oh.
Hadn't occurred to me that might be an issue. And then we start moving, and I realize there's no suspension at all. It is just steel, pile pieces of just cable, and nothing. No shock effects.
You knew at that moment. This was not going to be comfortable.
Not only that, the person that gets behind the wheel of the car, the man who bought the painting, is an 18-wheeler. He's a long-haul truck driver for Southwire, the big industry in Carrollton. And we're going across Texas at night. And no interstate. It was a state highway. There was no reason to believe. And he had a full tank of gas. No reason to think he was going to be stopping anytime soon.
No, they can hold it a long time, those truck drivers.
I did everything I could possibly do to get their attention. I slammed on things, and I was thinking, I'm definitely going to die. I mean, I'm smelling the carbon monoxide. I'm bouncing around, and your imagination will really start grabbing you in situations like this. Almost like a sensory deprivation tank, only I wasn't deprived of the senses of having things fall on me and bump into me and all that. And I opened up a crack of one corner that was kind of chicken wired shut, and I got open by that far. It was on the back side, and I stuck my lips out. So anybody that had pulled up behind us, and if they were paying attention, they would see these two lips.
They see lips,
you know, sticking out of the back.
Was that like Porky's? Was it kind of like that, or
like that? And I started really freaking out. I started getting super, super, super scared. And this is kind of, I said, I can bring it back home to Christmas. He had gotten this in Mexico, heat of the summer, as a Christmas present to give to his mom that year. And we're going, and I'm now imagining us getting rear-ended, you know, an 18-wheeler coming behind us and just plowing us, or him just going to sleep for a second, going off the shoulder of the road, recorrecting, and then the trailer flipping off through the desert.
These are not passing thoughts at this point.
Exactly.
They're overtaking
your
mind.
They're real. They've happened already, and I'm dead. And I am beginning to really have a panic attack. And I notice just the occasional street light that goes by. Whew, there's just a flashlight that goes across Black Velvet Jesus, who's propped up over there. And I was serious as I could possibly am now. There was no joke about this. I started praying as fervently as I've ever prayed in my entire life. And I actually did, because we were joking. We called him Black Velvet Jesus all day. And at first I was going, please, Black Velvet Jesus, get me out of this. And you know how you start making deals and things like that? And I finally thought, well, maybe I ought to just drop the Black Velvet thing and go straight to the man. But in the passing light, I was praying until beads of blood were forming on my forehead. And it was the most miserable night I've ever had in my entire life. And that was the only thing that helped me hang on to my sanity. They finally came to a stop at some sort of flashing red. And I got on my back and I kicked the top of that thing as hard as I could. And they got out, and they opened up, and they described my eyes when I got out of there. They said,
red?
Just looked like a madman.
Yeah. Wide with
just
fear.
A madman. I mean, I ran away. I ran 40 feet away from the trailer, and I was just standing there looking back at it, you know, like I'd been in a tiger cage in Vietnam. And one of my buddies goes, I think you're lying. You just want to keep it to yourself. I said, get in! Get in, my God! We still got another half a state to go, you know?
Señor Jefe, do not worry.
Oh,
Black Velvet Jesus will protect you.
And, I mean, it was just, I don't think I made any deals that I wasn't able to live up to, at least for a while. I might have had a couple that were long range, but the picture still exists. And yesterday, when I was telling the story about my teenage daughter who kind of gone to golf on me and stole the baby out of the manger at one of our local Catholic churches.
Remember.
And the pastor called in, the priest called in. And
Father David.
Yeah, Father David, and starts telling the story about, he remembered that year. He said it's happened a couple of times, and I had to go and take baby Jesus back with the kids as hostages. I wouldn't let them do it because they would screw it up, I was sure. And I was stealthily had like a football, baby Jesus, under my arm. But Jed Mescon and a couple other people said, man, you need to retell that story tomorrow. I said, well, I just told it. And he goes, well, you got to tell the Black Velvet Jesus story, which I probably told one time in its fullness many, many years ago. And I just decided today would be the day. Steve is, I'm going to get serious here for a second. I mean, that was serious to me. And it messed me up. I think I was actually deranged for a couple of days pretty badly.
It's funny to we the listener. It's funny. It's entertaining.
I mean, but, You know, I told you when I got home from my first surgery after breaking my leg, I was still in the driveway, and my sister called, and Steve, this incredible human being that, man, I love so much, he was the one that lost his granddaughter. His son pulled back Saturday to go to work and actually ran over his own 3-year-old daughter and killed her, and they were devastated. The whole town was devastated, tiny town. You know, 1,300 people, all of them showed up at the church. I could not get down there. And you talk about hitting reset on the priority buttons and me feeling pretty doggone bad about any self-pity that I had. You know, I mean, what could have been worse? What could be worse than that? I mean, even if you did it yourself, it's worse that your son did it or because now you got to watch them go through the guilt. And compounded, it's just an angel too. It was so tough on everybody, and I did find a way to feel sorry for myself again after the third surgery, I guess. And Steve just out of the blue sent me a picture of Black Velvet Jesus, just texted it to me, just didn't have any, there was no caption, just there he was. And I went, man, how did he know? I was in the depths of depression again, laying there on the couch going, you know, I've lost a whole year of my life. And I went, things could be much worse, and Black Velvet Jesus is still with me.
He didn't know, but Black Velvet Jesus knew. Mm-hmm.
He knew.
Knew where and, he needed to be when he needed to be.
It's up on the website, and I can't tell you the power it contains. If only the Catholic Church knew, they would have it in the Vatican in their list of icons. And
not the Sistine Chapel on the ceiling and that velvet there?
No, but it would be back behind bulletproof glass. I mean, the miracle of South Texas, 1980.
I wear my St. Christopher. Now I want to replace that with like a little Black Velvet Jesus or something.
Things like that, it's just bizarre.
That's
how they happen.
That's a heck of a story. I don't remember you telling that on the air before.
Yeah.
I remember you telling it at Aw camping trip, one that I remember. I don't remember you telling it on the air before.
It was, I mean, if it was, and I was out loud. I mean, had I had a GoPro, you'd have had the whole thing recorded. You know, oh, Black Velvet Jesus, please give me. And boom, something, you know, here's a Coleman lantern would bounce off my head. And I was going, I'm doomed. And so, I mean, I confessed all my sins, and I was trying to get ready. It was the end of the world. That was it for me. There was no way I was getting out of that rolling coffin alive.
You've had a couple of those experiences.
And you know, to them it was nothing. They were going down the road, they were listening to rock and roll, it was hot. And you know, that was I've mentioned, that was the year that the roads were literally blowing up. Little air pockets would expand to the point where it'd be like a stick of dynamite would go off and suddenly you'd have just a big pothole. And but that was the story. And when Jed mentioned it, my wife mentioned it, and then suddenly I had people calling me going, you got to tell a story. And because of you know, Steve and what happened with him this year, and usually get to see him. They're the ones that put together Christmas Adam. The Christmas Adam is the gathering of the tribes on the day before Christmas Eve.
Yeah, the day before Christmas Eve.
The day before Christmas Eve.
The name.
We have a big party out in the woods, and people just come, and we just have a big bonfire. And that all started with just a fruitcake that somebody found. They were walking on the day before Christmas Eve. It was a warm night, and they decided to walk to Ramburn, Alabama, and back. I guess that's about a 12-mile round trip, and had nothing else to do. And there was a fruitcake sitting in the middle of the road, still packaged, and they figured somebody had put it on top of the car and drove off from a family get-together,
gotcha.
And it just landed, and they were going, oh, what should we do? He said, I think we ought to just go over here in the woods and eat this cake. And they ate the whole thing, and that became an annual thing.
That's
it's been
good.
Going on for years and years.
Little
and years
card
now.
Signed Black Velvet Jesus.
Yeah, I was going to say. So